You're listening to another ambitious EntrepreneurNetwork.com podcast, the voice for entrepreneurs and small business. Now, onto the show.
Welcome to Business in Heels podcast, the podcast that inspires and educates women in business globally to succeed. Now over to your host, Anne-Marie Cross.
Hi, and welcome to episode 4 of Business in Heels podcast. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. With more than 92% of Australians actively online, over 70% of which are on the go on their mobiles, and 10.9 million of which have transacted online, it's important to understand the importance of being present at the forefront and optimised to cater to the masses. Now, stepping up to the microphone today is Mireille Saloum. Mireille is a serial entrepreneur. She's a connector, a disruptor, and a life enthusiast. And people are her passion and her purpose. And she became self-employed at the mere age of 22 and ran her first company for 8 years. She's currently working on 3 passion projects, including Conversion Cafe, a boutique CRO agency bettering online user experience while helping online businesses generate higher revenue. Examine Property, working with financial planners to assist select suitable clients on researched property investment, and of course, Business in Heels, running the Sydney CBD and Eastern Suburbs branches. She's also about to add mentorship to the mix. Now on today's show, Mireille is going to be sharing research-backed tips and tricks on improving our conversions on the websites, 7 customer service focus points that we should be shifting online, as well as key technologies every single business online should be using. Can't wait to hear more. So welcome to the show, Mireille.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
One of the things that I wanted to share before we dived into some of the key things you're sharing today, your passion for people. How did you get your love of people?
To be honest, it purely dates back to my family and my family background. So I come from a family of, I'm one of 5, and my parents are just, you know, the most loving, supportive people, and they've backed and inspired just about every rogue idea I've ever come across. They even joined me on, you know, the self-employment wagon when they were really quite risk-averse for the longest time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got 6 nephews and nieces. Yeah, they mean the world to me, and I've just always, I guess, been drawn to people just growing up in a really beautiful, like, loving, supportive environment, I guess.
Yeah, it's very important, isn't it, when we embark on entrepreneurship and running our own business, that we do have the support of those closest to us, because it really can impact positively and of course negatively if we don't get the support. So how wonderful that they were so supportive.
Yeah, they're very, very beautiful. And you know what, when you're building your own business, there's a lot of resilience that you need to have. And if you're not surrounded by the right kind of cheer squad, it's so easy to fail, you know.
Absolutely.
It's so easy to just give up on your goal.
Yes, yes. By the way, I was just interested, you've got other siblings. Did any of them enter into business? Are you the only entrepreneur in the family?
We started off, it used to just be me. And now, so I've got 2 sisters. Both of my sisters are now entrepreneurs. Both of my sisters' partners are entrepreneurs. My father is now an entrepreneur. Wow. And we just started mum's business a couple of months ago.
There you go. She's still
working in the full-time space, but yeah, we're all now technically self-employed.
Isn't that incredible? So you really empowered them too to get into their own business.
Yeah, empowered is one way of doing it. Some of it was not out of choice. Mm. Some of it was reactive.
Yes.
You know, my father was a printer by trade, and coming into his 60s obviously was lacking opportunity there, and was very down about the concept of not being able to find work or be young enough, you know, to get back into the physical side of the trade, you know. And I was just saying to him, Dad, there's so many options. And we built him a little business that's quite easy to run into semi-retirement.
Wow.
And, you know, he's been doing that for 4 years now, and he was probably the most risk-averse person.
Yes.
I have ever met.
Oh,
so it's purely
wonderful.
An option, you know, an option for another life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, isn't that wonderful that you could then go and support your dad? And I no doubt you're supporting your mum and your sisters as well. And of course, now you're here to share with us some of the insights and wisdom that you've learned along the way, and of course, helping your clients too. So you talk about research-backed tips and tricks that we need to know about so that we can improve conversions on our website. This is something so many business owners struggle with, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's become such a massive part of the digital industry. And initially what was happening is as businesses were getting online, their focus was always how do I get noticed online, mm-hmm. you know, and online marketing, inbound marketing, getting people to the front door of their website. And I like to speak about it in the physical sense, that picture your website like your office or your shop front, like the focus has always been getting people to your door. But now the shift is happening in the industry, which, you know, we've kind of been on top of for the last 3-4 years, mm-hmm. where now that you've got them to your door, what's happening inside? What's happening in your shop? What's happening in your office? Or what's happening on the actual physical space of your website to engage those people? And people relate to it very easily in the physical retail space, for example, where they spend thousands and thousands of dollars training their staff in expert customer service. They spend, you know, hundreds of thousands on beautiful fit outs to encourage people to, you know, engage in their store and in their brand and product. But that culture seems to be lost online. It seems to be like, I just want to get them to the door and I'll have whatever website up and running.
Yes.
But nobody's really, I guess, spending the time to move that same level of customer service you have offline to that physical online space,
yes.
if that makes sense. So that's why we kind of delved into it. You know, after I ran a digital media company for 8 years and we were all based on user experience design, mm-hmm. but it was only towards the end of that company that the focus became about how do we learn from what our users are currently doing online and how do we then, I guess, steer the online experience so that they're getting what they're looking for,
yes.
and they're getting their problems solved and can find whatever they need to find to either transact or get the information they need.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about bringing that, you know, real life customer service online. Quite simple, isn't it?
Well, it does. It sounds really simple. And we can see that when someone is on our website, they are interacting with us, with our brand message. And there's obviously some really key things that we need to have in place to enable that experience, that user experience to be optimized so people want to stay on the site. I'm sure we've all clicked through to some sites that we've gone, oh my goodness, get me out of here. And it's almost like walking into a store and then feeling just horrible. And
exactly.
the layout's not being thought about properly and you just want to get out of there. Now, are the 7 customer focus points what is going to be crucial for us? Does that also help in improving our conversions, or are there some other things that we need to think about before we even get into those 7 customer focus points?
There's other things to think about. There's some real basic techniques that, you know, have been proven to work across industries and across different types of website. And mm-hmm. one of them is trust.
Yes.
So I'll go into very quickly the what I call the wishy-washy part. But first of all, it's to understand your brand,
yeah.
be very clear about your values and very clear about who you are and what you want to do, what problem that you solve for them. So that, I guess, takes place in your physical branding. You know, do they have a clear idea of what your mission is? Is that easy to communicate on your website?
Mm-hmm.
And then what is your product and how does it solve their problem? Whereas you'll find a lot of people focus so much on the product and it's got this many gigabytes or it's this size and this color,
yes.
rather than saying it's here to make you more confident or to make your life easier, or, you know, like you want to answer the actual problem the clients come seeking a solution for, mm-hmm. you know. So one of those is being very clear about who you are, what your brand is, and what problem you solve. The second is trust. And trust takes a few different shapes online. Some of them are quite superficial. But for example, they want to be able to firstly know that they can reach you. And one of the big mistakes a lot of online businesses make is they think, look, I'm just going to run this online. They can contact me by email. I don't really want people calling me. But what that does is it makes the customer feel like you don't technically exist. You're not a real entity and I can't put my hands on you if something goes wrong. So one of the biggest things we found actually increases trust is having your phone number there. They might not use it. It's not about, you know, they're going to sit there and call you 24/7. But if you have a phone number there, it reinforces to the client that these guys aren't afraid to take my call if something goes wrong.
Yes.
Therefore, I trust them. You'll find a lot of businesses avoid it. And I understand the reasoning. You know, I might be a mum and, you know, I'm running this online retail store around my kids and I don't want to receive those calls 24/7. But if it's at the detriment of your business, then it's something you want to consider, you know, in that user experience. And it still might not impact your day-to-day, you know, you might still be able to get a voicemail message and say, you know, we'll be contacting you back in the next hour,
yes.
Or it might be a live chat that you can collect on the go. But just the customer just knowing that you're there, if they need you, in itself reaffirms your position of trust.
Yeah, yeah. Something else, Mairéad, and speak a little bit about this, because this may very well be a key area within that trust element too. Sometimes I've gone to a website and I've clicked on the About Us to find out a little bit more about the people running the business. And it was very, you know, almost a couple of paragraphs, not really mentioning any names and who they were. It's just we this, we that, no images, nothing like that. And so it really didn't enable me to find out more about who are these people. I love the front page. Now I want to know a little bit more about who will I actually be dealing with, particularly more for service-based businesses.
Yeah, of course. So you probably want to have an understanding about their expertise, mm-hmm. but more so you want to know why their expertise is relative to you.
Yeah.
So exactly right. The messaging around About Us is usually always like me this, me that. It's not always about just you as a company, you know, it's also what you're going to do for this person. And definitely, I definitely agree that they should be putting up their experience and validating why a customer should be working with you. That part is fine.
Mm.
But you also want to be telling them what problem you're going to solve for them, you
yes.
know. So like I might have 12 years of experience in this industry, but I'm here to help you better your sales. Or, you know, I want to use my 12 years of experience to help your environment become so-and-so.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not all about the technical side. And part of it is aspirational marketing. You've probably heard so many things about in the past, the likes of Apple and Intel competing against each other on what was initially a technical level, you know, my computer is faster, this computer has 20 times the speed, blah, blah, blah. But in the end, what they found really solved was the problem that they solved. Intel became about reliability and that you can bank on us. Apple became about an aspiration that you're living
yes.
outside of just the technical norm. You're innovating and, you know, you're part of a revolution, you know. So it's a little bit in the messaging.
Yes.
It needs to cater to the problem that you solve and making people feel like they're part of something bigger.
Oh, absolutely. Great example too that you've just shared. So we're thinking then about the trust. Are there any other key elements that we need to be aware of?
One of the biggest things, and this is probably specifically with online retailers, you need to have certain logos and, you know, visuals that customers have come to attribute with trust. So some of those might be, firstly, like having an SSL certificate on your site, which shows that, you know, there's a lock on your site, they feel secure, like my data is protected. You know, it might be that if you're part of a, you know, a Google store or if you're a Google trusted supplier, those have become like names that are considered a high authority for trust.
Yes.
So, you know, being able to use some of that to leverage your own trust is quite a positive thing for these brands. Sometimes if you're a partner of an association, for example, in a service-based situation, showing that you're a partner of, for example, like we work with a lot of financial planners, and when they say, you know, I'm a financial planner and I'm associated with the Financial Planning Association of Australia,
yes.
you know, that seems to have, you know, a brand, an alternative brand's leverage for your own company.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to tap into the trust of other associations or industry experts that might leverage your own brand.
Those are all great and things that we sometimes take for granted. Yet as you're explaining them, I'm just imagining myself going to a website and then checking these. And it's just little ticks of confirmation that, yes, this person is a real person. They're not a fraud, because otherwise, why would they be a member of an association that obviously puts their members through various criteria to ensure that they continue to deliver, you know, excellence as described by that association.
Yeah, exactly. And so you'll infer that same level of trust. And it
yeah.
might be in the tiniest graphic, you know, but you just see that and you go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
These guys are okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Look at some other ways they do it. They do it with testimonials as well. So sometimes it's, you know, validation by other clients. that they did this for me. I'm a real person. I gave them the tick of approval, so you can trust them too. Mm. You know, so whether it's testimonials, case studies, you know, a lot of these are service-based reviews, you know, for product-based. They're just like little bits of, I guess, warmth for the customer to say, okay, I'm not going to be done over here.
Yes.
You know, I feel quite safe.
Yeah. Also, too, if some organisations or companies have won awards, that can also be something that validates the level of expertise, because obviously they've had a certain criteria that has been best of class
exactly.
in their category. So that always helps too, doesn't it?
Exactly, exactly. Whatever you can use to leverage that trust or inferred trust will all help. In the end, you need to supply the service and the product that you've promised.
Obviously,
that's always
yeah.
going to be the bread and butter of mm-hmm. your brand, and it's always going to be what brings brand ambassadorship and gets people to refer. So you do need, you know, the quality product or the quality service in the end. That's always going to drive your business. But to be able to get people to entrust you with even trialing your quality product or service, you kind of have to do these little teaching them that you're trustworthy. You know, yeah, you have to do it through your website. You have to do it even on your offline marketing collateral. This isn't, you know, purely dedicated to your website, but, you know, we can measure it on your website. We can measure that if you don't have this versus if you do have this, the difference in your transaction capability, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Something else that happened to me not so long ago, I mean, as you can imagine, running a number of different podcasts, we often get people who would like to come on some of the shows, and they'll send a bit of information, and I'll often have a look either at their website or we'll go to their LinkedIn profile. Now, whatever profile you have online, everything is creating a digital footprint and adding to your credibility, or unfortunately in some instances it's taking away, you know, from
exactly.
your credibility. So if you've got sparse LinkedIn and if you've got half of it done, and you know, all of that can really unfortunately limit people's decision. You know what, this person is who he or she, and in this case she, says that she is. Anything else, or can we diving in? I'm dying to know, what are these 7 customer service focus points that we should be shifting online?
Yeah, look, I mean, I could go on all day about some of these trends. I want to get into the customer service points, because they do dabble into a few of the points that I would have mentioned anyway.
Right.
The way I kind of package these 7 points, it's very similar to what's happening offline. But what I'll do is I'll name it in the way that you know about it offline, and then
yes.
we'll compare it to a situation that happens online. So, for example, helpful staff. When you go into a store, if there's somebody that, you know, is terrible at customer service or not really listening to your needs, or, you know, there's nobody there to talk to in the first place, are you going to have a great customer service experience, or are you going to be like, this place really? Like,
yeah.
you know, so helpful staff is one of the biggest things I find brings the humanity back to online. Now, that might take a few different forms. What I find is companies that have live chat really do generate a higher level of trust, but also engage with their customer. Like, are you having trouble finding what you're looking for? I'm here to help. And it might just be a quick tool tip that minimizes, you know, as soon as that customer's transacting or dismisses it. But in the customer's mind, they're like, okay, I've got somewhere to go if I do need assistance.
Mm.
So things like live chats really do work. The other thing is what happens with, you know, your offline communications, or it's still online communications, but pre or post transaction. You know, if somebody subscribes or if somebody signs up to your website, you know, what kind of messaging are you sending them? Are you sending them automated messaging that's not really personalized, or are you actually emailing them going, hi, you know, I'm Murray and I'm your account manager.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for signing up, and I'm here to assist you if you have any, you know, any questions. There's so many forms of this, but they're all parts of online customer service. So
you
need to be helpful. Your staff need to still be trained in a similar way to how they would be offline, in that they reflect your brand values, your communication style and messaging. You know, one big example I use is I'm not sure if you ever called through to a Virgin call centers. They're quite down to earth in their messaging.
Mm.
And I remember the first credit card I ever signed up with Virgin, and they sent me, you know, the terms and conditions, which they wrote on the front, you know, the ugly stuff our lawyer made us send, you know, like, and I found them hilarious instantly. Like, I already felt like, you know, these guys are cool. You
yeah.
know, I can relate to this brand. They're young, they're a bit funky. And I instantly had a good feeling about the brand. That was, I guess, backed up when I did have to call them, and their staff answered with a very similar messaging style. Like, instead of going, "Hi, you've called, blah blah blah, thanks for call," like very dry. It was very, still very down to earth. "Hey, how are you? You've called John. Thanks so much for calling us today. What can I help you with, Marae?" You know, like, and the messaging was very similar. You'll find they do the same in their online chat. The messaging style is very similar. It's united across the whole brand. So I really encourage, you know, that helpful customer service, and making sure that even whether they're on live chat, whether they're on your call, whether they're emailing, it's all in line with the values and brand proposition that your company has.
What's the second customer service focus point?
Yeah, awesome. So the second one is basically visual merchandising, and this is more related to retail brands. Just like you would focus on what's happening in the shop front, you need to do the same on your website. So you need to find the right kind of, I guess, imagery or product that's going to drag people in, whether it's in your banners or sliding banners or on key billboard style areas on your website.
Yes.
Visual merchandising is very important to draw people in from your landing page to your product.
And all the consistency is very important. Just as you were just saying with the helpful customer service, consistency across is just going to continue. So what's the third customer service focus
the
point?
The third one is point of sale is massive. When you go into a shop, you've got clear signage that tells you where your checkout is. You've got somebody standing there. Right now, if your checkout is hard to find, or if the buttons are tiny or just purely text-based, people are going to struggle to click the buy now or find where their cart is, you know, and get themselves through to the end of the transaction. So point of sale messaging on your website and your checkouts and your buttons being very clear is super important to the transaction.
That's key. If we want to buy something and we can't find the buy now button, we're probably out of there looking at one of our competitors. Great, love it. What's the fourth?
So the fourth is wayfinding. I relate that physically to, you'd have signage, you know, in a shopping center, you have signage for the bathrooms, you have signage for your change rooms. You need to have the same level of signage on your website. And I usually relate that to the navigation that's happening on your website. Can people figure out very quickly where to find what they're looking for? Is your navigation clear, concise? You don't have too many signs pointing to too many different things and confusing people. I usually recommend, let's say your main navigation should have probably no more than 5 to 6 buttons or pages that it clicks to, just purely so that you're not clicking people away to too many different pages and overwhelming them with content. So you need to have a really clear path of where you want them to go. The other thing that's really powerful is having a very clear sales funnel. You know, whether they click on the product or if it's a service, they click on the landing page, they find out more about the service, they, you know, click on downloading a free book or an ebook, and then they move through to subscription, and there's a real clear path for getting them to become an active lead. So I call that wayfinding, but in the scope of online, you'd call it, you know, your sales funnel and your navigation.
Yeah, and that's key, isn't it? Because sometimes we go to a website and there's so many calls to actions and buttons to push and flashing things that it's overwhelming. And one saying I heard many, many years ago was, when we're overwhelmed, we do nothing. And in this case, we'll often click off the site, won't we?
Exactly. It's the biggest cause of drop-offs on your website. So it's really important to be very clear in where you want people to go, and make sure that where they're going is where they want to end up. You know, you really have to understand who your audience is and what kind of personas you're dealing with and what are the different things they might be looking for. You know, you've got to put yourself in their shoes, have a real clear sort of persona messaging, and lead the different types of people down the type of road they'd need to go down.
Oh, love this. Love this. What's number five?
So number five, I've got re-engagement. So once you do transact with somebody, or even if they don't transact and they drop off your website for whatever reason, you need to have elements that are either bringing them back. Some people do this with retargeting style advertising. Some of them do it with online notifications. So now your browser can actually notify you, you know, if there's a sale come up for something that you were looking at previously. You might send an email to somebody that subscribed, or if somebody, let's say, put clothes in the shopping cart and then decided not to buy for whatever reason, you need to have some sort of abandoned cart messaging that's getting them to re-engage, whether that be a coupon code, you know, if they buy it today, they get an extra 10% off or whatever it is. So you're really, your aim is to get them back to your site if they did leave and make sure they do re-engage with the product.
Yes, that's where sometimes you'll click on a site and then all of a sudden they're following you around everywhere, and that's because there's a pixel or so, isn't there, the code that they are using. And it's really the things that we can leverage now in technology is just incredible. So I'm so glad you're sharing this, because for many people who don't not aware of this, these are the reasons why customers or potential customers are just not clicking through to the site, because many other businesses now are incorporating these key focus points on their websites, aren't they?
That's right. So if it works for your competition, you better be on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're going to take your market share otherwise.
So. Exactly. So that's number five, re-engagement. What's number six then?
So number six is feedback. And like any sort of form of physical advertising or any like product that you send out, you need to be understanding what your customer thinks of your product, of your service, of your website, of your office, you know, like exactly what you would do in your physical space. Mm-hmm. You want to do the same thing online. So whether that be getting them to fill out surveys or having a feedback option on your website where they can come in and give you, you know, an honest opinion about how you're going, people have the choice to do that or not do that. But those that do choose to give you feedback, I would really consider what they're saying and try to, I guess, problem solve if they're having an issue. And that can also include in the reviews of your product. You might want to consider, is this something you want to stock? If people are finding it low quality or if it's not being shown correctly online or the colors are different, you really want to tap into that feedback to make sure that you're not burning the bridges of future transactions or future clients.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess too, especially if you've got products or even services where customers can naturally come back, if they're not naturally coming back, there may be something in the experience or with the product or service that you need to look at. Because if you tweak, if you change slightly, it's going to mean that there's a repeat business there for you. So very important. And what's number seven?
So number seven is, I guess, what every brand dreams to have. You know, when you have brand ambassadorship, you're more likely to get people refer your brand. And that's the strongest form of marketing because it comes from a trusted source.
Yeah.
So referral is a massive part of your digital experience, just like it is in your physical experience. And the way you do get referrals is, A, being true to the problems that you solve. Is your product holding up? Is your service holding up? Were all those elements strong that we've talked about, your helpful staff, your point of sale messaging, your user experience in general, was the product strong? Did they get the full works and quality of service? And then obviously, you know, if they did, and if you manage to check these things off, how do you then prompt them to pass your name on to their friends? How do you incentivize them to let people know, whether it's, you know, we'll give you a coupon code offer for each person that you refer, or if this person buys, we will then reimburse you something. So you basically want to entice people, if they become brand ambassadors, to refer and be rewarded.
Now, if we're talking about key technologies that every online business should be using, what are they?
So there's three pieces of technology I wanted to tell the listeners about today. So one of them is called SimilarWeb. That's SimilarWeb.com. And it's a great tool that we use to do some competitor research and get a bit of insight around what our competitors are doing, what kind of marketing is driving leads to their website, how many people visit their website a month. So it gives you a nice understanding about market share and the marketing efforts that your competitors are up to. The second one is a tool called Wigzo. Now, Wigzo is quite a new thing, but it's really amazing for conversion rate optimization. So basically what Wigzo does is it can actually collect permission to market to people through their browser. So whether it's notifications about sales, or whether it's, you know, telling them that something that they were looking at is now has a coupon code to encourage them to come back. You know, it can check if they're about to exit the website and prompt with an offer. It can do email personalization. So it's really fantastic.
Wow.
It's basically designed around bringing people right back to your website. So really cool tool. It's WIGZO.com. And the last one is called Compete Shark. So it's Compete Shark Like the Animal, shark.com. Now, Compete Shark is actually a very shifty tool. We basically use Compete Shark. It's also another form of, obviously, competitor research. But what it does is it lets you track if your competitors are doing A/B testing. And it also shows you a visual of their website on any given day. So why we use this is because, for example, if I'm looking to hold a sale today, I can actually see if my competitor tries to watch me and outcompete my sale by a certain percentage. Mm-hmm. Or if they're A/B testing, for example, two different product lines, I can monitor exactly what they're doing as far as marketing, testing their user interface and any changes to their website since the last time I visited. So it lets you kind of keep on track of what your competitors are keeping on top of. Mm. Makes sense. So all around, they basically aim to give you insight to what's happening in the market share around you and improve the conversion rates to your actual website. So three great tools there for you.
Marae, exactly. We have covered so much incredible information, and I'm sure we've only just scratched the surface. How can people get in contact with you to find out more?
I have run across so many different platforms. You can get in touch with our business. We've got a website, www.conversioncafe.com.au. I'll explain the cafe one another day to you, Anne-Marie. so it's conversioncafe.com.au. You can also contact me on hey@conversioncafe.com.au or obviously on our phone number, which is 1-300-223383, and we're happy to help your business find out a bit more about what's happening with your customers.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I mean, this was just so valuable. And for those of you who have taken notes, I'm sure you've filled up half a notebook already, but please reach out and speak to Marae. She certainly is an expert in her field. Now, thank you for joining us again today. We want to continue the conversation over on the Business in Heels Facebook pages and groups. So go to www.businessinheels.com for further details and go ahead and tell us what's one aha. I'm sure you've had many, but what's the biggest aha that you've taken away from today's show? And also, information is great, but look, you need to take action. So what's one action step that you're committing to within the next 24 hours to get into action so that you can continue to grow your network and, of course, grow your business? And we can't wait to read your comments and connect with you at one of our upcoming in-person or online networking events. And remember, get clear, walk with confidence, as your decision and your destination is closer than you think.